Jon Stewart is back at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. Listen to The Daily Show Ears Edition wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Hey guys, welcome to the podcast. Happy Wednesday. It's a good day here in St. Louis. It's the end of the day for me. It's been a wild one. Just got done pitching my reality show to a network, and it was a really fun call that I was dreading all day because I felt just like, what am I doing? I'm going to do a reality show, but now I'm feeling a little bit jazzed about it now that I talked about it. It scares me to put myself out there that much. I mean, I know I do it on here, but the fact that it does scare me means it'll probably be amazing because every time I get scared of doing something, it turns out to be pretty good. But it was fun. So that just happened. Before that, What did I do today? Well, I recorded the second half of this podcast, which you're going to hear in a bit, with my buddy Sean O'Brien. He came over and we had a really fun chat. He is hilarious and I love him so much. So look forward to that. After we recorded, we went and played pickleball. And I have to admit, I did not, I'm not proud of how I acted. I don't like playing. Well, I'm playing, it's my ex-boyfriend and his family. And then our couple other friends, mutual friends. And I'm just bad. I'm the worst at sports out of everyone playing. And I know that I am. And I don't like being bad at something. And I actually do like pickleball. It's actually like a fun game. And I'm not terrible at it, but I am compared to everyone else. And it's frustrating. I just don't like being this bad at something. But the thing was, how I behaved that I didn't like was that it came time for me to play, and I the opponents, it was me and my ex-boyfriend, and then the other two people that were going to play were the best two players that we were all playing with, my friend Greg's brother and then his friend. And they're just like so good. I mean, like really, really good. And then my ex-boyfriend is amazing as well. So it was like the three best players in me. And I just felt like, oh my God, everyone's just going to have to play like with the girl who doesn't know what she's doing. And they're going to really have to like dumb it down for me. And I'm just slowing them down. I'm making them have less fun. And the added pressure of everyone who's not playing is on the sidelines watching me suck. And that is what got to me. And I just kind of panicked and was like, I don't really want to do this. And they're all just like, come on. And I'm like, please, someone else play. Like other people wanted to play. So I was like, please, someone else play, please. And they were just like, no, no, you can't give up. And I was like, I'm begging you. I don't want to do this. And I ended up making like a scene because I just wanted them to say, okay, you don't have to. And then I could sit down. But it was like, they wouldn't let me. And so I had to play. And then what happens when I have to play and I don't want to? I don't even try. Because what is more embarrassing than missing the ball every time you swing for it, or having it go like the opposite way you want it to go, or not even hit the net, or like whatever, just embarrassed playing terribly? It's when you try hard and still play terribly. So my whole thing was like, I didn't try. And so that when I sucked, it's because I was being a little bitch and didn't try and being a little brat, because there's nothing more humiliating than someone like really going for it and whiffing it, as opposed to someone who's just like standing there being like, I hate this and I hate that I suck at it. So I was being a little baby, and I didn't mean to cause a scene. That is the last thing I want to be, is like the center of attention in a game where I just want to just sit on the sidelines and just joke around with people who are also sitting on the sidelines and watch the game. That's what I wanted to do. That is how I'm cut out to perform on a court. I'll be the ball girl. I just don't want to play. I've always been that way. My field hockey coach from high school, I was talking to her once on Facebook years later, and she was like, you always never wanted to be put in the game. You always would beg me to not put you in. And I remember that every time I've ever been involved with sports, I have just wanted to not be seen. I just want to be invisible. I want to just like sit there and just enjoy myself and have people forget I'm there so that no one goes, it's Nikki's turn. I like doing things. I'm not like someone who doesn't like doing things. I like doing things when I'm good at them and when I feel competent and when I feel like I'm not holding other people back, but fucking pickleball. So I was embarrassed. And then it sucked because, so I didn't throw a tantrum. So I played. It lasted like 4 minutes because the score goes up till 11 and like it would just always, I would ruin. It was like, I think 2-11 and they were playing so gently with me too. And it was just humiliating, a humiliating loss. And it was finally over and I didn't even know it was over. And they go, good game. And I go, it's over. And they're like, yeah. And I go, yes. And like, they all laughed at how excited I was, but that's always how I felt at the end of any athletic activity, the end of gym class, constantly looking at the clock. If you added up all the times I've looked at a clock in my life, 90% of those times would be because I was involved in a sport that was over when a clock would run out, or I was watching a sport and it was over when the clock would run out. I just don't like, I understand people like sports. I know they bring a lot of people joy. I wish I enjoyed them. I like running. When I got to the court, my friend Greg Warren has been challenging me, or he's been telling me that he does these wall sits where he sits on the wall, but you get back against the wall and you sit totally parallel. So your thighs are parallel to the ground and you sit, and then you put your hands behind your head, like in a sit up position kind of thing. And then you do that for 2.5 minutes. And it took him months to build up to 2.5 minutes. I busted out a 2.5 minute one right away. And I was really proud of myself. So I was able to show some athletic prowess as soon as I arrived on the court. And then 2 seconds later, they were like, my ex-boyfriend took me aside and we served and practiced to serve for like 15 minutes. And that was fine. I don't mind one-on-one practicing when someone's like being a teacher, because that's a good use of their time. He was feeling like he was doing something. When people are having to drop down to like an amateur, not even amateur, just like a special needs person level of athleticism so that I can have fun, so Nikki can play. And then as soon as I hit the ball, everyone goes, wow, good job. And I'm just like, please don't do that. And then I get mad and then I turn into a bitch and I go, please don't bring up I was just such a bitch. I was not in a good mood. And then it was embarrassing that I wasn't in a good mood. So we got done with the game and I'm sitting there and I get an email that I have to send in a voiceover for Dave Matthews Band Radio, which I had completely forgotten to do this morning. And the guy emailed me being like, I need this ASAP. So then I had to leave and it looked like I was leaving because I was like sad about not being good and not wanting to play. But I had to leave to go do this thing. And so it was just bad timing. And I looked like I was such a little baby leaving. I got there late and then I left early and everyone just probably thought I was such a bitch. Not my problem. Not my fucking problem, right? Yeah, it's rough. I just, it brings up a lot of feelings for me when I am forced to do a sport that I suck at. I feel like a kid all over again. It's probably good for my skin. Youthful. You know, when I said that I had to leave, I did tell them, I go, I have a thing that I have to go record. And it just sounded like such a lie. And even someone goes, oh yeah, I've got to go return some VHS tapes to Blockbuster, kind of like making fun of me trying to come up with an excuse. But I didn't want to go, no, really, you guys, I have to record. I'm the voice of DMB Radio. And they need to tell people that you can submit your request for DMB Radio. Dave's answering your request live on air. Submit by September 18th at 7:30 p.m. Go to SiriusXM. Like, I didn't want to go into it. So I just was like, haha, but I really do have something. Bye. So I followed up later with them and I told my ex-boyfriend, I go, I know it seemed like I was lying and wanted to leave early for another reason, but I had to leave and because of this email. And I don't lie anymore. I had to tell him that because he was the one that got me into the Sam Harris book, Lying, which was the first thing that I ever heard of Sam Harris. The first time I ever heard of Sam Harris was when my ex-boyfriend caught me in a bunch of lies. Not big lies, little lies, and not lies that were, they were lies that were out of fear that if he, if I told the truth, then he would leave me. So they were lies that were like, I just don't want to upset him. And they weren't like, oh, I'm cheating on you lies. They were like, I don't know. I don't even know what I was lying about, but I was just always scared that I was going to say the wrong thing. So I would try to say the right thing, which in turn would be a lie, you know? And I just got caught in too many of them. And he gave me this book and was like, you should check out Why It's Never Good to Lie. So I read it back then and I was blown away. And so I just reread it. And it is, I can't recommend it enough. It's really fascinating. I bookmarked a couple of things to read to you because I thought they were interesting. Circumstances in which you go, oh my God, of course you're going to lie. And you really never have to lie. Well, there's certain times you can, but let me tell you about this one. Okay, so he says in this, have you ever received a truly awful gift? The time it took to tear away the wrapping paper should have allowed you to steel yourself, but suddenly there it was. Wow. Do you like it? That's amazing. Where did you get it? Bangkok. Do you like it? So the person keeps asking, do you like it? And you don't want to lie, right? So where? What does he say? Where were you when were you in Bangkok? She goes, Christmas. Do you like it? Yes, definitely. Where else did you go in Thailand? Okay, so there you go. He goes, I have now broken into a cold sweat. I am not cut out for this. Generally speaking, I have learned to be honest even when ambushed. I don't always communicate the truth in the way that I want to, but one of the strengths of telling the truth is that it remains open for elaboration. If what you say in the heat of the moment isn't quite right, you can amend it. I have learned that I would rather be maladroit. Let's look up what that means. What the fuck, Sam Harris? You're always fucking using words that I don't understand. That's what I love about reading books on my phone is you can just instantly look them up. It means bungling. Okay. Maladroit means bungling, clumsy, awkward. Okay. Well, cool. New word. I have learned that I would rather be bumbling or awkward or even rude than dishonest. What could I have said in the above situation? Okay, here's one thing. So he could have opened it and he could have gone, wow, does one wear it or hang it on the wall? You wear it. It's very warm. Do you like it? Again, she goes, do you like it? And then this is the great answer. You know, I'm really touched you thought of me, but there's no way I can pull this off. My style is somewhere between boring and very boring. So then he says, this is getting much closer to the sort of response I'm comfortable with. Some euphemism is creeping in, perhaps, but the basic communication is truthful. I have given my friend fair warning that she is unlikely to see me wearing her gift the next time we meet. I have also given her an opportunity to keep it for herself or perhaps bestow it onto another friend who might actually like it. I am trying to think of a circumstance in which, you know, I've been forced to lie. And it oftentimes is that exact scenario. Do you like it? Or being given a gift that I don't want or don't need. But what I've always have learned to do now is just being grateful, feeling the sentiment behind it and celebrating that. So I probably, if someone gave me like a shirt I didn't like, which happens a lot, not from like my friends, because my friends typically don't give me, oh, you know what? Andrew gave me a pair of earrings that I just knew I would never wear for Christmas last year, I think. And to be honest with you, they were too much. And they just were heavy and they were big and they just weren't my style. So, and you know, it's not hard for me to be honest with Andrew, but I think I said something like, which is not good. I was like, why did you do this? Because I knew he spent a lot on them because I think he told me how much he spent. I'm like, why, Andrew? First of all, at the time I was like paying his main source of income. So I was like annoyed that he spent my money on, which is his, on this thing for me that I wasn't going to wear. And I said, you know what? This is so nice. Thank you so much. I just like had to accept it and just was very appreciative of the thought. I did wear them one time and he was so excited. But like I've gotten a lot of jewelry from guys, will you just don't do it? You just get it wrong too much unless we specific, but it's so ironic because like the guy is ultimately supposed to buy you a ring. I mean, not Andrew, but like a guy in your life is meant to buy you a ring someday. And I just see why do you never hear girls being like, that ring sucks? They always seem to like it. I've really never heard a story of a girl being like, that's the ugliest ring. You know, I don't know. I've gotten some fucking ugly jewelry from guys. Some good stuff too, but like my ex-boyfriend got me a pearl necklace.
Come joke.
He got me a pearl necklace once and I just don't wear stuff like that. And I was stressed out about it because he spent a lot of money on it. It was from Tiffany and Tiffany. And I felt terrible that I didn't think I was going to wear it. And I talked to my stylist and they were like, here's how you could wear it and style it and make it work for you. And so then I was like, okay, I will. And then I just never did. And I know he noticed, I know that bummed him out. And I don't know, are you just supposed to wear something you don't want to wear just because someone got it for you? I mean, I've bought gifts for people and they haven't liked it. Like I bought my mom a pair of shoes that I thought would make her happy because, you know, objects tend to do that for some people. They don't really, it doesn't work like that. But I sent them to my sister. They were like these shoes that I found online that were being sold at this vintage shop that I always buy from on Instagram. And they were these cute clogs that were leopard print. And I sent them to my sister. And I was like, do you think these would make mom happy? And she was like, yes. So I got them. And I was so excited to give them to my mom. And then she opened up and she's like, wow. I mean, she must have read this fucking book because she's like, these are just not my style, but they're so cute. And she's like, I don't know where I'd wear the, you know, and she was like doing all of those tricks. And I was so bummed. I don't know what I wanted her to do. I wanted her to be like, oh my God, and like cry, but she didn't. And that's okay. Gift giving is so intense and like, just there's so much opportunity to be disappointed. I think some of the most embarrassing times I've ever acted was when someone gave me a gift I didn't want. One time my friend sent me I wasn't a bitch to him, but for my birthday he sent me cold brew, like three boxes of like Trader Joe's cold brew. And at the time, I was like obsessed with like saving the planet and not wasting anything. So I got sent like all of these plastic bottles or like glass bottles, which is fine. Glass is okay. And then he sent Starbucks cups, like plastic cups, so that I could make it myself. Like he knows I love Starbucks. So he sent me all these straws and cups. And I was like overwhelmed with like how much trash and like waste this was. And I was pretty upset about it. And my friends like had to like talk me off the ledge because I was like, I'm going to text him and be like, what kind of gift is this? Like, I mean, I was such a bitch. But I mean, I came up that way. Like my mom, every Christmas used to be like hell in my house because I would always be such a bitch about my gifts. I guess I felt misunderstood. I think that's the problem with it is like when I get a gift where someone I love gives me a gift and it's just so something I would never want, I just feel like, do you even know me? Do you even love me? Are you paying attention? And I feel like angry. And I have a hard time being like, oh, they just missed the mark. And I turn it to like, fuck you, which is the opposite feeling that anyone wants to give when they're giving you a gift. It's really psychotic of me. But I used to make my mom cry every Christmas because I would just be like, I mean, I will never wear this, but you can have it. I'd always just give it back to her. I'd be like, do you want it? I don't want this. And she'd be like, I can never get you anything. And I'm just like, yeah, because I don't, honestly, most Christmases I ask for nothing. I don't want anything. Because ever since I've earned enough money, I don't need gifts. I get everything I want. However, I do like when my friends I have gotten thoughtful gifts. Like my friend who produces this podcast got me a bird adoption. So that was a gift that was like actually charitable and I can go visit a bird whenever I want. And I have like a bird in my name and it's not extra stuff in my life. That's the best gift. No more stuff, no more things. That was awesome. My friend Anya gave me a very tiny one little earring and it was a great gift because that is what I knew or she knew I wanted it because I would always compliment hers. Boom, great gift. The best gift that I ever got, though, was like my bird Kiwi when I was in fifth grade. I cried out of happiness. I was like one of those little girls on the, when they get to go to Disney. I've never cried out of happiness since. That was the only time. It was like a completely uncontrollable emotion, but I was just so fucking happy. And then he died because my mom cleaned his cage with some kind of chemical, which I just found out about on a podcast that I had to trash because the recording went bad. But my dad and I did a podcast in which he told me that my mom killed my bird. I was told someone else killed him, a family friend, because the way she left a window open when he was staying at their house. But really, it was because my mom cleaned the cage. Because he was going to stay at my friend's house. Because the cage had to be cleaned before she let someone else see it. Which my mom's obsession with seeming like we're everything's clean, like cleaning obsessively before other people encounter our lives, ended up killing my bird. Or maybe it was time to clean the cage and she just did the wrong way. But I'm guessing it was just a hastily cleaned cage. And so many birds die that way. It's very common. I don't even know what I've accomplished in this podcast, but we've got a great second half for you coming up. So let's get into it right after this. Welcome back to the podcast. I am joined again, as I was last week, I believe. Maybe it was longer than that. By my good friend, comedian, local St. Louis comedian, and my friend of over 12 years. Sean O'Brien, everyone. Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, Nikki, 12 years.
Yeah, Jesus Christ, dude. Yeah, I always...
Since that Creepcore walk. I don't know if you remember.
I went to Creepcore Park, Lake, with my dad. I don't know, like, during this quarantine, and I was reminded of that walk that we went on where I had to pee so bad. I was losing my mind. And we were, like, trying to find a place to pee, but we got, like, lost, and it was...
We were just in a part of the park where there was just no... porta potties or whatever, and you like ran over to like some like farmer's field or something, like over train tracks.
Yeah,
and I just found some corner. It was pretty intense. So
we've been friends a long time. You knew me back when I drank. Your story of me one time when I was drunk was one of the memories I kept going back to when I decided to quit, of like how I would Jekyll and Hyde, and I would just change so violently on like a dime. And you were over here one time. We were like day drinking, I think. And then it like moved into the nighttime.
Right.
And I was like, hang out. And we kept drinking. And God only knows what we were like doing. Just probably just talking and hooting and hollering. And then I told you that you could stay the night.
You're like, you're staying on the couch, you know. And I was drinking pretty hard. I think we both were.
Yeah.
And I was like, great, that'll work. And so, you know, we just kept going and going. And like, I'm pretty gassed up. And then out of nowhere, you're just like, I think this has to end.
I think I went to the bathroom and I came back in the room and I was like, Sean, you have to go.
You got to go. You got to go now. Just go.
Oh,
go.
My God. And I kicked you out and then you had to sleep in your car.
Yeah, for a little bit. I had to stay in the car.
Yeah, let's be honest. You probably gave it 10 minutes.
I gave it five. All right, five. A little bit five. I drove hammer through Kirkwood. I rolled the dice and I won.
I'm not laughing at drunk driving. It's very dangerous. And I'm glad we both don't do it anymore. Yeah, that's why I moved to New York eventually. I was like, I'm going to get a DUI. Because I wouldn't be hammered driving. But that's the problem. People always go, oh, I'm not going to drive drunk. I'm just going to have a couple. And then, or I just got, someone just wrote to me about quitting drinking. And she was like, I really want to quit. And I've just been telling myself I'm just going to have two. And the problem is, yeah, the sober you is like, two, that sounds good. But then the person who is only going to have two gets fucking wasted.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
That person wants to have two more. And it's like, you can't, you don't, no, just two doesn't, if that worked, people would do it.
Right. It's the world's greatest lie. Yeah. what you're saying is, I want to enjoy a buzz. I think I can control myself with two. But then you hit two. Now you're just starting to feel good.
Yeah.
You're not feeling great, but you're feeling good. So then you go into this one more game.
Yeah.
And then one more is, you know, then you're three. And then you're like, well, four, I'm fine at four. Like four is probably less than 0.08. I think I can roll the dice and make it.
Yep.
And then you hit four. And now that's when your impaired skills and judgments get a little off, you know.
I mean, it's for everyone, it's different. I mean, yeah, for men, it's probably around four. For me, it would be like two drinks. And I would just black out after two, like literally just stop remembering things. Because John Mulaney has a great joke about it, but he talks about like when you drink, the more you drink, the earlier you black out, because your brain just goes, well, we know where this is going. Right. We're going to close early tonight. Like they just like, you know, like this is only going to be a shit show. Let's stop remembering things now. I've talked about it a lot, but I just find it fascinating that when you black, do you black out when you drink?
No, that's never. So it's hard for me to identify with people say that. I'm like, what does that mean?
Like you won't like, cause you can drink. I mean,
yeah, I can. I mean, I've hit pause over the last year. You
yeah,
know,
I know that.
Pretty hard,
like,
but oh yeah, no, I'm okay with throwing them back.
How can you have, so you've never just like had a conversation where you didn't remember literally any details of the conversation?
No, not like I'd be like, hey, we were talking about, you know, dodgeball, whatever the hell it was. I could remember the subject. I can't remember like, hey, you remember you said that about this thing, that subject? But that whole thing of, oh, I don't remember talking to you for 15 minutes. Yes. Like I've never had that, which is actually terrifying that that happens to people.
It does happen to people. It happened to me all the time. And it was like, oh man, I read this thing. So I love Reddit so much. And I read the story the other day. There's just all these amazing little anecdotes. There was this woman on there. And this seems like an unrelated topic, but there was a girl on there that was asking about, she had just gone on a date with a guy who she went downstairs and to like meet him. And she's overweight. And so she knows how much, like sometimes she shows up on dates and the guy like is disappointed or like, whatever, like she feels like she represents herself well on these apps and is not trying to deceive anyone about her weight. She even says that she's overweight, all these things. She'll show up though, and the guy will just like want to get out of it, and she can just sense it. It's so uncomfortable for her. So she'll go down sometimes and say, oh my God, I forgot something upstairs, to give him a chance to leave so that she doesn't have to like make him go on the date with her and make herself go on this date with this guy that's going to eventually just want to get out of it anyway. And so she'll like make up an excuse to go up there and go back down. But where was this going with, fuck, God, I'm not even high and I'm losing my train of thought. This really feels like a high moment for me. Okay, so the drinking thing of not remembering. So there's this one girl that was talking about, so this girl shared a story of that, and she was like, how do you deal with this rejection if you're a bigger woman or like a girl on these apps that, you know, doesn't, guys don't tend to like, or that when they see you in person, have you been rejected in person after meeting up with a guy? And one girl shared a story that a guy one time woke, it was a friend, and they got drunk at a bar. They ended up hooking up. She probably liked him for a really long time and they ended up hooking up. And he woke up in the morning from a blackout in bed, and all they did was cuddle, and she didn't black out, and they just kissed and cuddled. But he woke up and he goes, oh my God, did we sleep together? And she was like, no, we just cuddled. And he goes, right. Thank fucking God. And he just was so, and she was so hurt at how excited he was that he hadn't had sex with her. And she felt it was about that, but it was like, it's so sad that that even happens. But I relate to it too, of having fears that like, I'm going to show up and the guy is going to be like, ew, like just something about me is going to rattle him in a way that like, you misrepresented yourself on these apps. But I did relate to the feeling of waking up and being like, what did we do?
Yeah, I mean,
and that, you don't.
I don't have that at all. And that, thank God, because I think I would actually just quit drinking, because that means you have zero control. That's like in an ambient state where people just say they sleepwalk and they don't know about it and all shit. Like, which I take. And by the way, I think it's great, but I'm not going to talk about that.
No.
But I'm telling you right now, if that was me, I think you'd have to do a hard pause.
I did Ambien and I tweeted something that I had no recollection of tweeting, or put it on my Instagram story. And it was only a good thing that I said. I was just promoting Tom Papa's special.
It was positive. You know, he's a good comic. So
can you imagine a side effect might be posting a rave review of a special you haven't seen yet on your Instagram story?
So wait, you have no, that was like a blackout for you. Was that the same?
Well, I looked at it the next morning and I was like, I've never seen this special. I didn't lie and say I'd seen it, but I was like, oh my God, funniest guy ever, you know? And I just promoted Tom Papa's special and I didn't remember making, I honestly thought someone else did it or something, but it was written in my words. Like it was written the way I talk on Instagram. It was really bizarre. And it made me go, okay, at least I'm making positive, I'm doing positive things in my life. Like I remember Schumer had a joke about like, you never black out and something good happens. You never wake up from a blackout and like, oh my God, my Pilates mat is out. Like you never do anything like good, but it turns out I do. And sometimes I would like tell people how much I love them and like tell my true feelings about like friends, like confess my feelings towards friends. The first time I got drunk, I remember telling this girl I loved her and was like, I wish we were closer. I just love you so much. And then the next day she was like wanting to hang out and be best friends. And I didn't I did not feel that way. It was a lie.
Yeah. You were insanely sweet and nice when you were on the way to the top.
Yes.
When you were boosting and climbing that mountain, when you were up top, it was a magical moment when you were up there. I mean, everything's cooking. It's like, you're going to make it. I'm putting you on this show. I mean, all you would just build all this, and then something just went
manic.
And then you're like, this night is over. You got to go. But I'm Nikki. Yeah. I'm drunk. I'll talk to you tomorrow.
That's really dangerous. That euphoric manic state of like, everything's going to be great. I mean, no wonder I loved drinking. I mean, the first time I drank, it was like that. It was the answer to all of my prayers.
Right.
There was an ease of life. There was an excitement for life. There was nothing to worry about. There was just only happiness and enthusiasm. And I've shared this story a million times, but the first time I drank, which I realized looking back, I was like, what a problem. I just go, why don't we do this? Why aren't we like this all the time? Yeah. I don't understand why humans don't drink all the time.
Yeah.
Because I felt like with it enough. I didn't feel like, oh, I couldn't get work done. And that's I'm reading this book about addiction right now, phone addiction, called Irresistible. It's the I'm pointing at my phone as I say that because the book is in my phone. So it's like I'm pointing at the book, but I'm pointing at my phone. And it's fucking fascinating because it's just talking about addiction. I really recommend this book to anyone who's interested in like breaking the cycle of their phone or whatever kind of addiction you're dealing with. But it is that just the euphoric feeling. I mean, it's just, it must be what heroin feels like. I can't even imagine how good heroin must
feel. Yeah. I mean, I've never experienced heroin, but from what I gather, it's like a zillion times better.
I mean, you've done opioids though.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had like from surgeries and stuff. I've had pain.
I mean,
pills,
do you remember those feelings?
Yeah. And actually I can see why those are addicting.
Hell yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, if someone's heroin. Like, here's 100 Percocet, I'm like, sign me up.
Right.
In fact, I sound like such a drug addict. I would rather, if someone's like, do you want a case of whiskey or 100 pain pills? I was like, I'll take the pain pills all day. Cause pain pills just cure boredom. Mm-hmm. You just get like, that's what I got. Like you would just take them. You could just turn on TV and then you would just get this little tingly sensation and just sitting there doing nothing felt great.
Right.
That's where booze. It wasn't that booze for me was a more social thing. Like I needed to start, like, that's why I never drank alone really.
Yeah. I never did that. Either. I love when I drink, I want to like call people. I want to like get involved with, I want to go do activities. It makes me more social. But the same with pot. I really like, I'm not someone who likes to smoke pot and then just watch TV. I really like to like talk to people. It makes me call people. It makes me more social. And that fucking gets in my head too, because I feel like someone who gets depressed when I'm alone too much. And so I want to turn to those things to make me be around people, which is good for you to be around people and be more social. We're going to go be social today after this.
Yeah,
we're going to play pickleball with a bunch of people. Every Tuesday we play pickleball now at
this
noon.
This is
our first time doing it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this?
You know, I mean, I've had a couple warm-up games in, so I'm a little familiar now with the
game. If you don't know what pickleball is, it's stupid. it's actually great. I'm not a sporty person, but it's like it's between ping pong and tennis. It's like it was an adapted, like, I think they made it for like old men so that they didn't have to move as much. So it's on a smaller court and you use paddles, like kind of ping pong paddles. And it's quite fun. I don't like when people take sports so seriously when they're just fun games. And we're going to hang out with a bunch of people who are very competitive.
Yeah, they are.
My ex-boyfriend, our soon to be ex-friend, Greg Warren.
Right.
and then my, our good friend, my ex-boyfriend's brother, Tim, local comedian, Tin Combi, and then, his fiance. And then someone else is playing too. I forget who.
I think it's Greg Warren's brother's playing too.
Oh God. So. I mean, like, can I just cheer people on? I don't want to even play. I want the social aspect of it, but I don't know that I need to play. I don't want to be this like special needs person that everyone is like, good job, Nikki. The other day I played and they're just like, wow, that was great.
Isn't that the worst when somebody talks down? You clearly know you're just, patronizing son of a bitch.
Oh, like I would like let someone else get the ball. Like I would do nothing essentially. And they'd be like, great call on that. And I'm like, well, I just didn't. you, I know when I'm bad at something. You don't have to sugarcoat it. I'm okay with being bad at pickleball. Right. I really am okay with it.
Right.
But
that's how I felt about that stupid painting I showed you guys the other night, where I dragged you guys in on. And then I know everyone's being nice, but we're like, no, that's really a good job. And I'm like, you assholes, I'm tracing.
Let me just tell you.
This is tracing.
Let's back up a little. Back to beep, beep, beep. Back it up. You, which I got to say, I was in the group of people that was extremely impressed by this. But you know what I was impressed by more than anything is that you found a hobby that is like an interesting hobby that I would have never expected for you, because you're someone who I don't know. You're definitely an artist because you're such an amazing comedian and brilliant thinker. And you're just one of the funniest people I've ever known. And most people who know you would list you among the funniest people they know. But for you to pick up this weird hobby, how did this come about? And what exactly is it that you're doing?
All right. So I started, it's called Paint by Numbers.
Yeah. I think we all know that.
Well, you have to clarify what that is,
but it's,
I didn't know what it was.
You never heard of Paint by Numbers?
I didn't know. Like, I've heard of it, but I was like, I don't know. I had no idea what it means. I didn't know if it was just like just tracing, or I just didn't know what it is. Okay. I've heard of it, but I never.
But how did you come across it?
So it was just during the quarantine.
Sure.
And my girlfriend and I were just like bored, and she's like, well, we got to do something, and I'm like, what do you want to do? And I was like, name anything, and then she goes, well, you want to paint? And when she said that, I was like, you know, my head's like, no, I don't want to paint. But I wanted to be a nice person. So I was like, yeah, let's paint. So she ordered what she thought was just a canvas and brushes, but it was just paint by numbers, where it's just tracing. You just literally.
So because of her misorder, you guys ended up doing this paint by numbers thing. Yes. Really, you were just going to like free paint.
Yeah, we're going to free paint. Well, she's like, oh, it's paint by numbers. Fuck that. I was like, no, this works for me. I need guidance. Like, that's mm-hmm. the I am. And it was like, okay. So all the reds are number one. All the purples are number two. And you just correspond the colors with the numbers. And I just took my time. And then the next thing you know, I have this stupid painting. And
you guys, I couldn't. It was after a show at the Funny Bone a couple of weeks ago. And Tim, Chris's brother, our mutual friend Tim, was like, hey, we're going to go out in the parking lot. Sean's got a painting he's going to give me that we're going to put in our new house. So we go out to the parking lot. Sean rummages through the trunk of his car, pulls out this painting, and it is so good. I mean, it looked like you would have never known a paint by numbers. It was paint by numbers. You would have never known it.
Right.
And it does take some skill in a sense, I would guess, that you have to have patience.
You have to have a lot of patience. That's the only trick. As long as you have patience and you can just keep your hand follows the line, then you got it.
Okay.
And as long as you're standing 6 feet away from the painting, nobody can tell.
It's really impressive. I want a Sean O'Brien in my foyer when I get one someday. You sold one on eBay.
I sold the one on eBay, yeah.
You did a paint by numbers. Does the woman who bought your painting know that it was a paint by numbers?
Yeah, no, it was on there. Yeah, yeah, full disclosure.
What? You really disclosed that?
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, I thought you just...
No, you say paint. Oh, and they sell on there. By the way, I left money on the table. I sold it for $100. I think I could have cleared $250. I'm not kidding.
So you paid $25 to make this painting?
I paid $30 to make this.
How long did it take you?
If you go by hours, it probably took me about 30 hours.
But those 30 hours you were listening to your sets, you said you get a lot done while you're doing the
yeah, I listen to my act during a lot, and then I'll just keep playing it. And then, you know, I'll be like, okay, that actually sounds right. Keep saying it that way.
Just work. You get a lot out of doing the painting. And then at the end of it, you sold it for $100, but you feel like you left money on the table. You could have gone up to maybe $200.
Which the money, I didn't give a shit. That's just a funny thing that it sold.
It's so funny that you sold it.
Yeah. Honestly, the main reason I kept doing it is what you were just talking about. It just keeps me off my phone.
Yeah.
You're not on your phone, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's. I'll go 3 hours in a row and I won't look at my phone. And if I'm not doing the act, then I'll just play a bunch of music. But it's really relaxing. Like you wouldn't think, I don't know what it is. There's something about you just get lost in your stupid little drawing.
Yep.
And then you're like creating this cool thing, even though again, it is tracing.
Well, people were really getting into coloring books for a while. Remember adult coloring books?
I do. Yeah.
That was a huge craze. And it was because it was like really therapeutic. I remember Anthony Jeselnik being like, you know what I'm doing right now is coloring books. And I was like, you're like doing color. And he was like, it's really therapeutic. So I understand like doing something. And I bet it makes you like think of jokes, because when you're doing something that's mindless and like doesn't really require skill and like thought process during it, you think of jokes. Like, when do you think of jokes? The best time.
Well, it is now painting. Before painting, it was walking my daughter on the lake.
Something mindless.
Something just, walking the dog for 30 minutes will give me 15 ideas. Sitting at Starbucks with a pen and paper, I'll go blank.
Yeah, I mean,
cannot work in those environments.
I sit at Starbucks with a pen and paper, but that's not, unless I'm like actually focusing on a joke, like, okay, you need to work this one out and like, and this is a math problem that you need to crack, then I can do that. But in terms of new ideas, not happening at Starbucks. But when mine does happen is when I'm blow drying my hair, because a lot of people get ideas in the shower. I don't take long enough showers to get any fucking ideas. I take literally 2 minute showers.
Holy shit.
And if I'm not washing my hair 35 seconds, I don't need more time than that. And I'm not in a rush. I don't know what it is. I don't need to be in there that long. But when I'm blow drying my hair, that's when I get a lot of good ideas, because it's just a mindless thing. You're trapped in a spot where you're doing something that you don't – or when I'm at the dentist and you're, like, staring at the wall, that's when a lot of ideas come to me. But it's like, yeah. Or not really meditation, though. Meditation is – do you meditate?
I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried. I know it's fucked up what I'm about to say. I just don't do it right. I just don't do
it. That's not
right.
True. Yeah, so, I know. It is fucked up what you're about to say. But you can't do it wrong.
Okay. Well, then yes, I meditate.
Yeah. Well, if you're sitting down and closing your eyes and doing the amount of time it says, then you're doing it wrong.
I'll tell you exactly what I'm doing.
Yeah. What do you do?
I shut off, the phones are gone in my bedroom. No sound, everything's quiet. Sit on the edge of my bed, close my eyes, don't talk, breathe quietly.
Do you focus on your breathing? What do you do?
Yeah, I do.
You need some guidance.
I'm still missing something.
Yeah, you need some guidance, but that's a great start. And once you do get the guidance, you can't do it wrong, which is the lovely part about it. I wanted to ask you and follow up, because last time you were on the show, we talked about depression, getting on meds, getting help with like food shit. I want to talk about meds though. Have you looked into it?
I am meeting with my doctor a week from this Thursday.
Nice.
So 8 to 9 days from now, whatever.
Oh my God. Yeah, good job.
Yeah. So I would think we're going to move forward and be proactive with that.
Hell yeah, dude. Yeah. I just got on something last week and it's not going to be the thing about meds is, it's not just like you wake up and you're like happy and like everything just works, right. But it just gives you a little bit of assistance.
Well, it's a slow roller, right? Like you don't just take pills on Thursday and then you're feeling good Friday, right?
Well, with ADHD meds, which I'm taking, which is great. Those are like fast act. Like they start working the day you start taking them and you can feel the effects. Now over a long term, like you build, you create the habit with them and then they can have longer lasting effects and new effects that I'm excited to see work into my life, because I've only been on it like less than a week. But with depression meds, they take longer. I said on the podcast yesterday, I feel alert and I can focus on things that are important to me when I need to, but I feel a little bit socially awkward. Because I feel like when I don't like being in a situation, much like I'm worried about going to pickleball, I don't think I'll be able to tolerate it and put up with it. I don't think I'll be able to tolerate stuff I don't like anymore or people I don't like anymore. And not that I don't like doing pickleball. It'll be hard for me to like smile and just be like, I like this. Which is good.
As if you weren't on the medicine, you don't think you'd have that same reaction?
Oh, when I'm not, I can be, it's not that I can be fake, but I can just like kind of check out of my brain and like put my feelings on hold. So I think it's just making me more, I don't know.
Well, actually that's for the better then. That just means that you're just being more honest with yourself, right?
Yeah.
If you're just annoyed in a situation, you're basically telling me that I'm just not going to put up with it and just dance through it. Correct.
But it makes me worried because people in situations I once was able to be around, and this is only based on a couple instances. This weekend, I just felt like I have to go. Like, I can't do this. I just felt so...
Trapped with them or something?
I just felt like I wasn't myself. And I felt like being able to stand in this... To stay in this social interaction, I have to be fake. And for everyone to be happy with me in this moment, for me to not be authentic with myself, I will have to be fake. And I can't do that. And it really was like struggling with that. And it was like... it happened a lot. And so I'm like wondering, is everything I've been doing not what I've wanted to do my whole life? Or is this medicine making me not enjoy things that I once enjoyed?
That's fascinating. Does it affect your appetite?
Yeah, it does make you, Yeah, it does. I mean, that's like definitely one of the side effects, and it's unfortunate because people use it so that they can lose weight and like do stuff with that. But you shouldn't seek ADHD medications if you want to lose weight.
I was on from first grade to sixth grade, and I actually told my whoever doctor, I said that I don't want to live anymore, and they But this was Ritalin in the
80s. Dude, no, that's a lot of people get suicidal.
Was
a
nightmare. Like literally, it was so bad because I was such a. The problem is I did need it because I was just hyper loose cannon. But when I took, like, I'd actually spit my pills out half the week. That's how dumb my parents were. They're like, "Did you take it?" I'm like, "Yeah." And then I just dump it, and then I go to the class, and the teacher's like, "We think he needs more." Like, they thought I was already on the drugs, so they kept upping the dosage. Fuck. But I wasn't even taking it half the time. Then they gave it to the nurse, and the nurse, you couldn't pull punches. Yeah. So I would take it, and then the kids would basically, "Oh, look, it's Quiet Sean Day," because I just would not talk. I'd turn into a zombie, and I wouldn't eat. It killed my appetite.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I
sell my lunch, like chocolate milk.
If I lose my appetite, it's not an option. I have to eat. Like, I don't let myself skip meals anymore. I don't let myself, even if I'm not hungry, if it's time to eat lunch, and I have not eaten in 5 hours, it's time to eat. Like, I used to just always do this thing where it was like, "Oh my God, I'm not hungry and I should be. This is exciting because my body will like start losing weight now." And that's like how you diet. That turns into you starve and then you binge and then you like, that is what gets you in trouble. And I can't reiterate that enough for anyone who's out there struggling with stuff. Like, when you starve yourself, you think it's going to be good and you think you're going to lose weight, but there will always be the downside to it of you're going to overeat at some point. You're going to make up for the starving. You will find a way. It might take you months. It might take you a year, but it will bounce back and you will, you can't keep it up. So yeah, that's, I'm in a position where right now where I feel really good about taking these meds. And if my appetite is killed, I just go, well, that you don't have an option to not eat.
Yeah, you just override that feeling and eat.
You don't have an appetite. It's not like you're like full and you're going to throw up if you eat. It's just like you just force yourself to do it. Like you force yourself to go to work or you force yourself to work out, like anything, you know? So, okay, we got to go, but I want to have people be able to follow you. Where can we follow you?
Twitter is at...
Do you tweet? Gentleman.
Not much. I just don't, because that just website just pisses me off. And dude, I just so try exciting. And because I actually want to engage, but then I know it'll just stress me out and lead me into like this fucking war with someone. And I'm not very articulate with nonverbal communication. Like, I think it's gutless. I really do. I think if you're a shit talking Twitter person, I just think now if you're making a statement, that's fair enough. But it's like when people attack others and it's like, unless it's like
Twitter is a disgusting place. And I wasn't on board with that assessment of it until just recently. I was always like, why does everyone say this is so toxic here? Like, I just don't get it. And now I realize because it brought out my toxicity, I was like, oh wow, this makes me an uglier person. And now I see it. So on Instagram.
And then Instagram is also that Sean O'Brien.
Sean O'Brien. S-E-A-N O'Brien. Sean, you'll be on the podcast again. Thank you so much for hanging out with me today. We have to go hang out with other people. And I'll see you tomorrow on the podcast, guys. Squirt, squirt, a jackpot.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.